easier. Chapter 9, The Coaching Plan. In the previous chapter, I defined a tool to assess the current skill level of a product person in order to identify skill gaps. In this sequel chapter, I would like to share how I coach product people on each of these specific gaps. In truth, the full version of this coaching plan is really this entire book, but I am hopeful that I can provide enough examples and suggestions in this chapter to help most managers give useful guidance and coaching. Note that I am using the same people, process, and product taxonomy of skills that I spelled out in the previous chapter, so if you are unsure what any of these topics are about, please refer back to that chapter. And also, as with the assessment chapter, I am using the example of the product manager here, although much of what is written here will also be helpful for product designers and tech leads. Product knowledge. To set your expectations, product knowledge is where a new product manager spends most of her time in the onboarding process. It usually requires 2 to 3 months of time to ramp up, assuming she has provided the necessary coaching and she aggressively focuses on this for several hours per day. But to be clear, a product manager that does not have this level of knowledge has no business serving as a product manager for her team. And the responsibility for ensuring this level of competence is squarely on her manager. User and customer knowledge. There really is no substitute for getting out of the office and visiting users and customers. That said, there is much to be gained by first taking advantage of the knowledge of your colleagues. As you go about this learning, remember that each person you speak with brings their own perspective, and you're looking to understand that perspective and learn as many perspectives as possible. If your company has a user research team, that's my favorite place to start, and it is a valuable relationship for the product manager to establish. User researchers are there to educate you. They know if you don't truly grok the issues, then you won't fix them. Next, if you have a customer success or customer service team, that is a terrific resource. You want to learn who their favorite customers are and their least favorite, and why. You will also want to spend quality time with this team to understand more about how customers perceive your product. But for now, you want to learn what they can teach you about your users and customers. Product marketing is another valuable perspective on users and customers, and another important relationship for the product manager to establish. Product marketing will also have good insight into the broader sales and marketing organizations and the people you should talk with who will have useful perspectives. In many companies, the founders or CEO have had more customer exposure than anyone, and they are another great resource. Ask the founders which customers they consider the most helpful for you to truly get to know and understand. You're not only looking for happy customers, just as you're not only looking for unhappy customers, you're after as many perspectives as you can get. At this point, you're ready to go out there and meet real users and customers. To set your expectations, when I, Marty, first took responsibility for a new B2B product, my manager wanted me to visit 30 customers, and further, he insisted that half be from outside the United States before making any meaningful decisions. I don't think that the number 30 is special, but I can tell you it's not just 2 or 3. I typically recommend at least 15 customer visits as part of new PM onboarding. When I returned from that trip, I had progressed from knowing virtually nothing to knowing as much as anyone in our organization. I leveraged what I learned and the people I met and the relationships I established for years. Once you're actually sitting down with users and customers, a whole other topic is the techniques we use to learn, but that's the discovery techniques topic. With every interaction, at the very least, you're looking to learn, are the customers who you think they are? Do they have the problems you think they have? How do they solve that problem today? What would it take to get them to switch? Note that there are some obvious differences between customers that are businesses versus consumers. But the principle is the same in either case. Note also that if you're joining an existing team with a skilled product designer and tech lead, then you absolutely want to learn as much from them as possible. And if you're joining a new team, then you want to include these two key people with you during your learning. Data knowledge. There are generally three types of data and tools that the new product manager will need to achieve competence on. There is typically one tool that contains the data about how users interact with your product, user analytics. Another tool typically contains data about the sales cycle for your product, sales analytics. And a third typically shows how this data is changing over time, data warehouse analytics. Realize that achieving competence for each of these tools means two things. First, that you know how to answer questions with that tool. You're learning how to operate it. Second, you need to understand what the data in the tool is trying to tell you. Your go-to resource for coming up to speed on the data, tool operation, and data semantics is usually one of the company's data analysts. This is another key relationship for the new product manager to establish. But to be clear, unless you have a full-time data analyst or data scientist embedded in your product team, they are not there for you to delegate work to them. They are there to educate and empower you to answer questions with data. This topic is intertwined with the topic coming up about understanding your business. Every product has a set of key performance indicators, KPIs, that collectively describe your product's health. And while data tools will help you understand where you're at, your business will dictate which KPIs are most important for you to focus on. Industry and domain knowledge. In general, the product manager is expected to become competent on the domain. This is, of course, different for every product. Media products are different from developer products, which are different from advertising technology products. Fortunately, in most cases, there is a wealth of easily accessible knowledge just an internet search away. However, with certain products in very specialized domains, such as taxation, surgical devices, and regulatory compliance, there will usually be an in-house resource available to all of the product managers who is an acknowledged expert on the domain. These people are sometimes called subject matter experts or domain experts, and this person is another important relationship for the product manager to establish. The PM is not expected to become as knowledgeable about the domain as these experts, but she does need to learn enough to engage and collaborate effectively. In terms of broader tech industry knowledge, there are many industry analysts that provide analysis and insights. Key to industry knowledge is identifying which industry trends are expected to be relevant to the PM's product. The first step is to identify the trends, and then there may be some education needed to understand what the trend or technology enables and what the capabilities and limitations may be. Also included in industry knowledge is competitive analysis. Product marketing is a good resource to get started here, but the product manager will need to have a deeper understanding of the offerings, vision, and strategy of each of the major players in the landscape. When I coach product managers on competitive analysis, I like to ask the PM to evaluate the top 3 to 5 players in the space and to write up a narrative comparing and contrasting the strengths and weaknesses of each player, highlighting opportunities. Business and company knowledge. For most new product managers, understanding how their own business works requires the greatest amount of work. But this is often the essential difference between competent product managers and those who are not. One way I like to get started on this is to have the new product manager fill out a business model canvas. Any of the variants are fine for this, for their product. It is a quick and easy way to help the product manager quickly realize the areas she may not yet understand. Sales and marketing, go-to-market. The go-to-market strategy is an essential aspect of every product. This describes how our product makes it into the hands of users and customers. It applies to every type of product, from consumer to enterprise, but it's usually most involved when selling to businesses. Your product may get sold through a direct sales force or an indirect channel such as resellers, or directly to your customers. The sales process starts with marketing, which itself has many different strategies and techniques. Ultimately, there's always some type of funnel, starting with people becoming aware you exist and hopefully proceeding through to the point where they are an active user and customer. The new PM needs to understand the entire funnel from awareness to trials to onboarding. It's especially important to understand the capabilities and limitations of the sales channel. Your colleagues in product marketing are normally your go-to resource for learning about your go-to-market strategy. Finance, revenue, and costs. It's also essential for the new product manager to gain a deep understanding of the financials regarding her product. This involves both the revenue side as well as costs. I've long advocated making a friend in finance for this purpose. There is a set of financial-related KPIs for every product, and you need to first understand what those KPIs are, for example, lifetime value of the customer, and what they mean, for example, how is lifetime value calculated. Finally, you need to learn where your product stands. For example, is your lifetime value sufficient compared to your cost to acquire new customers? Legal, privacy, and compliance. Another critical aspect to your business is legal. These issues mainly relate to privacy, security, compliance, and increasingly, ethics. As with finance, establishing a relationship with someone in legal who can help the new PM understand legal constraints is important, not just in coming up to speed, but also when considering new product ideas. Business development, partnerships. Most products today involve some number of partnerships. It may be a technology partner that's used to deliver your products or services, or it may be a sales or marketing partnership to acquire new customers. Whatever the purpose, these agreements usually come along with constraints about what we can do. So it's important for the product manager to understand these contracts and constraints. Additional areas. The areas described earlier are common to almost every product, but it's also true that many products have one or more additional areas depending on the nature of the company. If the company is structured around multiple business units, then these business unit leaders, for example, GMs, are critical stakeholders. Similarly, media companies have editorial content. E-commerce companies have merchandising. Hardware or device companies have manufacturing. And companies that sell globally have international, as just a few examples. Product operational knowledge. This topic really should be obvious, but I can't tell you how often I meet a product manager who doesn't actually know their own product beyond how to give a basic demo. But hopefully it's clear that a product manager must be an expert user of her own product in order to be trusted. For consumer products, it's not usually very hard to become expert on the product's use. But for products for businesses, this can be much more difficult, especially when the product manager lacks the domain knowledge. Coming up to speed on this typically involves reading whatever user or customer documentation exists, taking whatever training classes may exist, spending time with customer service staff, and, if at all possible, using your own products on a daily basis. This is known as dog fooding. As a clear litmus test, if an important industry analyst were to offer to come visit your company to discuss your product, either the product manager would give the briefing herself, or at a minimum, she would be spending significant time preparing the person who would be giving the briefing, usually the product marketing manager. Process skills and techniques. There are countless process-related skills and techniques, and new techniques are always emerging. The main objective for those of us responsible for coaching product managers is to make sure the PM is knowledgeable about techniques that are suitable for the task at hand. Product discovery techniques. At a minimum, the new PM must understand the four different types of product risk: value, usability, feasibility, and viability, the different forms of prototypes to tackle these risks, and how to test those risks qualitatively and quantitatively. There are many online resources and training classes, and the book Inspired goes into detail on these product discovery techniques. When I coach PMs, I typically have them read the book, and then I like to make sure they understand the techniques by describing different scenarios and asking the PM how she would address them. I'm looking to make sure she is thinking about risk appropriately and that she understands the strengths and limitations of each technique. Product optimization techniques. For products that are in production and have significant traffic, there are important techniques referred to as product optimization techniques that the product manager needs to understand and know how to effectively utilize. This typically involves learning one of the commercial tools and then running an ongoing series of A/B tests, mostly to optimize the product funnel, but it could be used for other purposes as well. Product delivery techniques. In general, product delivery techniques are the focus of the engineers on the team. However, it's important for the product manager to understand the delivery techniques that are being used, for example, continuous delivery, and in some cases, such as release planning, to take a more active role. For example, for certain large product changes, a parallel deployment may be called for. The product manager needs to know what these techniques entail, especially the additional engineering costs, to make suitable decisions regarding delivery. Product development process. The decision as to which development process the engineers use to develop and deliver software is up to the engineers and engineering leadership. However, the PM does play a role in the process, and she must understand what her responsibilities are. Most teams use some form of Scrum, Kanban, and/or XP, extreme programming techniques. Often, teams use a blend of these. I usually recommend that the new PM take a CSPO, Certified Scrum Product Owner, course if she has not already done so. That simple and short course will explain her responsibilities as the product owner for the team. Most companies have also standardized on a tool for managing the product backlog, so the new PM will need to learn this tool as well. Note that I have long complained that too many product managers have only had CSPO training, and then they don't understand why they fail as a product manager. Hopefully, it is very clear at this point that the CSPO responsibilities, while important, are just a very small subset of the responsibilities of the product manager of an empowered product team. People skills and responsibilities. Thus far, we have mainly discussed areas, product knowledge, and process skills and techniques, where just about anyone who's willing to put in the time and effort can succeed. And I would argue that, without that foundation, nothing else matters. That said, the difference between being just a competent PM and a truly effective PM is often their skills with people. There has long been a debate in the product world about whether these people skills can be effectively taught or coached. In my experience, for most but not all people, you can significantly improve and develop their people skills, but they do have to want to improve. If the person is not good at these skills and shows no sincere interest in improving, then that's when the manager needs to help the person find a more suitable job. Team collaboration skills. Modern product management is all about true collaboration between product, design, and engineering. This begins with ensuring the product manager is knowledgeable about the real contribution of product design and engineering. The PM does not need to be personally skilled in either design or engineering. Most aren't, although many PMs believe they're great designers. But they do need to understand and appreciate their contributions to the point where they understand that what design and engineering brings to the table is just as essential as what the PM brings. Next, the PM needs to establish the relationships necessary for true collaboration, which is built on trust and respect. In my own coaching of PMs, once they've learned the basics we've described earlier, most of the coaching I do has to do with collaboration. When I sit down with a product team and talk about a problem they're trying to solve, I rarely spend time with just the PM. Almost always, it is with the PM, the product designer, and the tech lead. Again, that's just the nature of product today. But during these sessions, I am witness to countless interactions. And afterwards, if I've observed something, I often pull the PM aside and try to point out how her interactions during that meeting either helped or hurt her efforts to build trust. A one-hour meeting discussing a problem or objective will usually yield many good examples I can use as a coaching opportunity for the PM. How engaged is the rest of the team? Are they acting like they are empowered to solve the problem, or are they acting like order takers? Is the designer and engineer bringing potential solutions to the table, or just pointing out issues with whatever the PM proposed? Are they spending too much time talking, for example, planning, and not enough time trying, for example, prototyping? How are they resolving differences of opinion? Stakeholder collaboration skills. Many of the points regarding team collaboration skills also apply to stakeholder collaboration skills, but it's actually easier to build trust and relationships with your own teammates, for example, your designer and engineers, because you interact with them every day, focused on solving the same problem. There are additional dynamics at play with stakeholders. First of all, while most PMs are individual contributors, most stakeholders are company executives. They are often very knowledgeable about their part of the business, and they are often used to giving orders. The key to successful working relationships with stakeholders is establishing mutual trust. For the PM, that starts with putting in the time and effort to understand what each of the stakeholders' constraints are. We discussed this under business and company knowledge earlier. But once the PM has put in that effort, she needs to personally convince each stakeholder that she understands what they are concerned with and that she'll make every effort to come up with solutions that work for them. And in any case, whenever she identifies something that might be of concern, she will preview those solutions with that stakeholder before the team builds anything. Building this trust takes time, as there are less interactions, and each interaction carries more weight. Again, in my work with product teams, I often observe PM stakeholder interactions, and there are many good coaching opportunities. I try to reinforce the actions that help build trust and point out alternative approaches for actions that diminish trust. Evangelism skills. Especially in medium to large size companies, so much of product involves persuasion. This involves convincing your team and your stakeholders that you understand what you need to do and you've got a solid plan to deliver. My favorite technique for developing a strong and compelling argument is the written narrative, which is discussed in Chapter 11, The Written Narrative. I also encourage PMs to take a presentation skills class where your presentations are video recorded and you are provided professional critiques. I've personally taken this class twice over my career and consider it invaluable. Leadership skills. Finally, so much of strong product management is actually about leadership. Leadership skills are especially important for the PM because the product team and the stakeholders don't report to you, so you must depend on persuasion and leadership. Which is to say, for the PM, leadership must be earned. It does not come with the title. But this is also why so many strong product managers go on to become successful heads of product and CEOs. So, how do you develop these leadership skills? The prerequisites are the items just described. If you've done your homework and demonstrated your knowledge and skills, and you have earned the trust and respect of your team and your stakeholders, you are well on your way. Beyond this, I encourage all product managers to become lifelong students of leadership. Most of us know people we consider terrible leaders. Some of us are lucky enough to know people we consider exceptionally strong leaders. Discussing the defining characteristics of each makes for excellent coaching discussions. Sidebar: coaching tech leads. I absolutely love coaching tech leads. More often than not, these are the people behind the world's most impressive innovations. A tech lead is essentially a senior-level engineer who has taken on the additional responsibility of participating in the ongoing product discovery work. The tech lead is the key partner to the product manager and product designer. They are asked to care not just about building and delivering reliable products, but also to care about what gets built. Tech leads bring deep knowledge of the enabling technologies, and when that knowledge is combined with a direct understanding of the customer's pain and problems, magic can result. If you spent any real time with engineers, you know that not all engineers are interested in anything beyond coding, and that's fine. We don't need every engineer to become a tech lead. I will say that many of my favorite product companies try to screen for this when they interview engineers. They want engineers who care just as much about what they build as how they build it. But even these companies make exceptions. It's only a problem if you don't have at least one such person on a product team, especially if you hope to be an empowered product team. A surprising percentage of the tech leads I've coached have told me that ultimately they would like to one day start a company of their own. I strongly encourage this and point out to them the many successful CEOs in tech who started as engineers. When this is their goal, I often encourage the tech lead to consider the product management role for a year or two. Even if they go back to engineering, this experience is invaluable and positions them much better for a startup co-founder role. No matter what their career goals, the real potential of a tech lead comes from combining their understanding of technology with an appreciation for the issues customers struggle with. I always encourage tech leads to visit as many customers as they can, but I also try to make a point, after visiting an interesting customer myself, to stop by and chat with the tech leads about what I saw and learned and what they might think about that. The bottom line is I have found that every single minute you invest in coaching a tech lead on either customers or business context will be among the best possible uses of your time. Sidebar, coaching product designers. Product designers have an especially difficult job. There are many design-related skills, and while the product designer does not need to be an expert in all of them, she does need to have a considerably broad range of knowledge and skills. Service design, interaction design, visual design, industrial design for physical devices, prototyping, and user research. Most successful product designers are very strong in at least prototyping and interaction design, and they know enough about service design, visual design, and user research to leverage the relevant techniques and people where necessary. As a design manager, your product designers often come from different backgrounds, so much of your coaching time will be spent helping the product designer address the gaps. The other important responsibility to keep in mind for design managers is that they are the front line for ensuring a holistic view of design. This means that, while there may be many product teams, each with a skilled product designer, the design managers need to ensure that the experience works as a whole across teams. Design managers ensure a holistic view by reviewing designs at the weekly one-on-ones, and by holding design sessions with the broader group of product designers, especially to discuss difficult design problems. One challenge when moving to empowered product teams is that most product managers and engineers coming from feature teams have never worked with a professional product designer, so they don't even know yet what they are missing. As a result, design leaders often need to raise the bar and educate product managers and tech leads about what strong product design is and how product designers contribute to successful products. Sidebar, loved. SVPG partner Martina Luchenko is publishing another book in the SVPG series, Loved, discussing the critically important topic of product marketing. As many know, product marketing is adjacent to product management. But what most don't know is that product marketing has changed dramatically and has become more critical than ever. What follows is an excerpt from her upcoming book, Martina Luchenko. Let me be blunt. Most product marketers aren't great at what they do. They are good at getting a lot of stuff done, but it's not always clear it's making a difference. The talent of the people in the role is also uneven, contributing to its reputation, somewhere between ho-hum and occasionally great. Product marketing is not managing a checklist of everything needed to get done for launch, project management, or just being a facilitator between product and sales. The classic understanding of product marketing is first you build a product, then bring it to market. The failure in this approach is companies just explain what their product does and why it's different and assume people care. Great product marketing requires understanding the market first. It pressure tests assumptions based on what the market tells you so you can adapt, position, and market into customers' true reality. It makes clear why your product matters and should be loved using customers' language, experience, and needs. The real indicators of successful product marketing are market adoption and momentum. But most people don't know what to look for or when is the right time to start doing product marketing. Take Company Z. They're real, but I'm not using names so you can think about all the startup stories you know just like theirs. They were a brainchild of a team of PhDs who collectively had decades of expertise among them. After being selected as a finalist at a well-respected technology competition, they decided it was time to bring their idea to market. Their technology was impressive. A prominent analyst wrote about its effectiveness, noting they had never seen anything like it. They showed a demonstration to a top C-suite executive at a Fortune 100 company, and he said, "This is amazing." They got venture capital funding based on all this and were off to the races. Or so they thought. As is common at these early stages, one of their technical founders was the front man for everything else. Sales, product, marketing, people. But after 6 months of meetings with dozens of executives, they didn't have any buyers. So they stopped trying to pitch their product at every meeting and instead started asking every executive they met what their most pressing priorities were. It turned out that the problem their technology solved didn't make the top five and in some cases even the top 10 priorities. You might wonder why Company Z didn't start there, but remember, they got some early data points that made them think they were on a path to create something of value. The team realized, with a little bit of rework, they could pivot their product into a more nimble solution to a problem that was much higher on these executives' priority list. Their new product intersected with a well-established, decades-old category with very mature incumbents. They created an easy-to-use setup that could much more quickly give teams answers. Armed with this new approach, Company Z created a demo that showed what their product could do. They figured since the product did so many things, they would show a demo. But this made them skip the crucial step of figuring out how to talk about what they did succinctly and why people should care. Without the right mental anchors, prospective customers still struggled to understand why they should pay attention. Company Z asked, "Should we talk about the regulatory environment, which makes what we do more relevant? Do we point out what's broken in the older incumbent software, even if we only do a piece of what they do much better?" Company Z tried to answer these questions by hiring salespeople to sell their product. Since they now had salespeople, they hired someone who could generate demand because the salespeople needed more names to call. That was a mistake. Without repeatable messages, the sales team couldn't effectively communicate the product's value. Despite a growing go-to-market team, very little changed. Less than a handful of customers signed on. At this point, nearly 2 years had gone by. Enter Josie, their newly hired director of product marketing. She positioned them into the existing category by carving out a niche they named that made their focus clear. Within 3 months, here's what happened. A white paper articulated what wasn't working with the existing category and introduced the need for the niche they named, A prominent analyst company was so intrigued by this white paper, the analysts in the category all asked to be on a call to learn more. She created all new product collateral, bringing more consistency between the sales deck and the website so they all messaged the same thing everywhere customers looked. She partnered equally well with product and sales, working in lockstep, adapting materials as frequently as was necessary. She was immediately seen as incredibly valuable by everyone in the small company. They declared and agreed on a marketing strategy. This meant even if Josie wasn't the one doing all the work, the rest of the team knew the why behind everything they were doing in marketing. Company Z eventually got some great customers and market momentum, but way more slowly and painfully than was necessary. Had they brought in product marketing earlier, they could have discovered and solved go-to-market gaps sooner. Instead, they spent a lot of time, money, and resources on things that weren't working. Marketing can be very esoteric to people who spend their lives building products. Product marketing creates the bones around which the body of marketing and sales work takes shape. This is why, if you're a technology company and only have one person doing marketing, it should be a product marketer. It's simply how you'll get to your goals faster. But who does the work and how well they do it is more important than the work itself. If you're investing in creating great products, it's imperative to also invest in great products.